There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You are indeed listening to The Grill from our new summer home of Kickers Sports Bar down here at Dubai Sports City. It's myself, Chris McCarty, with you through for the next 3 hours or so, an eclectic mix of pundits alongside myself as well, and there's an awful lot to discuss between now and 6 o'clock. We've got the ICC Cricket World Cup. It is ongoing. Day 24, match 28. It is India against Afghanistan. Updates as we go this afternoon. We'll also look back on the tournament as well. A shocker yesterday for the host, England, beaten by Sri Lanka. We'll look back on that, and we're asking the question whether this World Cup, whether the organisers have got it right. One pool of 10, they have reduced it this year. Have they done the right thing for the growth of cricket? We're asking that question. 4001 to share us your thoughts. Football, so much going on in international football. You've got African Cup of Nations, you've got the Copa America, small matter of the FIFA Women's World Cup ongoing, European Under 21 Championships as well. And if all of that wasn't enough, the transfer rumour mill is just getting that little bit busier as we hurtle towards a brand new domestic season. In tennis, well, there's tournaments galore over in Germany and the UK as well. Nick Kyrgios has been up to his usual tricks. We'll look back on all of that. Golf, there's B&W International Open from the Royal European Tour. There's the Travellers Championship PGA. There's been the NBA draft as well. And if all of that isn't enough, Mark Archer's giddy with excitement because it's Super Rugby quarter-final weekend as well. So much for us to discuss between now and 6 o'clock. And if all of that wasn't enough, we're also sending one lucky listener this afternoon on that all-expenses-paid trip to the ICC Cricket World Cup courtesy of Emirates Airline. Keep it locked in. Dubai 103.8. 4001 to have your say on the text line 04871 5500. I say it time and time again, we do not bite. Pick up that phone, share with us your sports thoughts as well. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Grill. Join the conversation.
Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye 103.8 app.
And I'm absolutely knackered already, just setting the scene for you over the course of the next 3 hours. So much for us to discuss, and it's only right that I brought in the A-team this afternoon. Delighted to be joined as always. And we were talking about this on the car on the way down. We haven't seen each other for a long time. It's Mr. Mark Archer. Very good afternoon, Arch.
Afternoon, Christopher, and afternoon, gentlemen, and of course, listeners. Yeah, plenty of sport, but it's all about the ICC Cricket World Cup. Double header Saturday, games 28 and 29 are taking place. Two undefeated teams in action today. Underway currently in Southampton, Afghanistan are taking on undefeated India. I'll bring you a quick score update. India, Virat Kohli won the toss, elected to bat first, 114 for 2 after 25. Half their overs gone, and the man himself, man of the moment, Virat Kohli, is not out, 53. Looking ominous, it's been a slow but steady start for India. The wicket is quite dry, it is turning and favouring the Afghanistan slower bowlers, but it's a good solid start by India, 114 for 2 after 25 of their 50 overs. Coming up, starting at 4:30 UE times at Old Trafford, Manchester. Should be a good match this. New Zealand undefeated, great win during the week as well against South Africa, probably one of the games of the tournament, followed by one of the innings of the tournament by Captain Kane Williamson in that defeat of South Africa. They will take on the West Indies. Now, the West Indies have disappointed me. I picked them to go all the way and win the event and make the semi-finals. Only 3 points from their five matches. A must-win match for West Indies. They will be eliminated if they don't get a victory today. And New Zealand are just doing what they do, going about their business, accumulating points. They're currently second. If they win, they will go top of the table. So, big match at Old Trafford, Manchester this afternoon. But currently, it's Afghanistan taking on India.
That is the voice of Mark Archer. He is with me all the way through until 6 o'clock. Alongside us as well, delighted to be joined by a sports journalist, a man who has worked for ESPN, a man who's worked for Sport 360, and a man who calls Dubai home. It is Mark Lomas. Very good afternoon to you, Lomas.
Afternoon, Chris. Thanks for having me here. Unfortunately, coming on the back of a couple of England losses. I think that's why you only call me in here when England lose. But yeah, a bit of a nightmare in the cricket yesterday. Turn up for the Bucks. And then obviously the under-21 football as well, England going crashing out. So it's not been a good couple of days for England on a sporting front.
I feel your pain, my man.
But I'm sure we'll talk about Scotland getting knocked out of the Women's World Cup as well a little bit later on.
We maybe just will give Scotland a mention. So Mark is locked in with us as well. And completing the quartet today, it is our armchair fan. He's been joining us over the past few weeks as well. It is Monty Gurahartakurta. And I say a very good afternoon.
Yeah,
I'm hopeful that I got your surname correct there
you
as
have,
well, Monty.
Chris. Well done, Chris. 10 out of 10.
Thank you so much for that, Monty. Wonderful to have you with us as well. Enjoying the Cricket World Cup thus far?
Enjoying the Cricket World Cup. This week's have been, the last couple of games have been really interesting. We've had no rain, thank God for that. Thank God the India-Pakistan game was finished and the rain stayed away. And there are some really nail-biting games coming up on Tuesday. England versus Australia, that's going to be a cracking game.
Well, given the fact that England lost yesterday, and we were talking about this off-air before coming on air with you guys this afternoon, the biggest turn-up for the books thus far in this World Cup, it needed something like that. Robbie and I discussed it at length on off-script midweek, and we were inundated with text messages coming in. There's no right or wrong answer to this. I felt that this World Cup, Archie, it's needed something, because the one group, the one pool of 10, I think Robbie put it beautifully when he said it's been lacking jeopardy. Do we have now a little bit of jeopardy with that result yesterday?
Well, I think an upset's good in sport. England as hosts have gone into the event as pretty warm, pretty hot favourites, really. But they've lost twice now to Pakistan, to Sri Lanka, two matches that you would have thought on paper they should win quite comfortably. But there are some flaws in the England armoury, and they've been exposed by some of the lesser teams. Big week for England, because they now play the three other big teams at the top of the table. Matches against Australia, the old arch enemy, India, and of course, you know, everyone's favourite underdog, New Zealand, are there or thereabouts.
Everyone's favourite.
What's? I mean, I was actually listening to you guys talk during the week, and I was actually doing a little bit of trolling of Robbie with a few text messages about some of your comments, and I disagree with some of the things that were said, and I have some thoughts on what the structure of the tournament, but what's disappointing for me is that the four teams now at the top of the table, Australia, New Zealand, England and India, look all for everyone's money now will be the semi-finalists with 20 matches to go. It looks as though the way that the matches are going to play out, those four teams, it's going to be really difficult for anyone to catch those four teams, which is a bit disappointing, because you just think that, and that's due to some of the poor performances, I think, by South Africa. Everyone thought they'd be in the mix. West Indies, we thought they'd be in the mix. That's some of the reasons why they haven't performed well. And it looks for me that the four semi-finalists that have been sort of there since week one look as though they're going to be there in the semi-finals. And next weekend is going to be interesting, just looking ahead, because next Saturday, Australia will take on New Zealand. I'll be at Lord's, so give me a phone call. I'll be there at the home of cricket. Give me a call if I find some time. And then Sunday, England will take on India. For me, that's the four semi-finalists. Well, it's going to be a good dress rehearsal, but maybe we need some big upsets now. We need one of those teams to go on a roll, but I'm just not sure which of the teams are going to pull their hand up. Maybe Sri Lanka. Maybe with that win yesterday against England, they'll find some ways forward, but I'm not convinced.
You've mentioned there that England need to play India, they need to play Australia, they need to play New Zealand, the other three teams in the top four. Of course, the top four qualifying for the semi-finals. A stat that I dug out this morning, England have not beaten those three since 1992 in the World Cup. So when you throw that into the mix, Arch, England,
because they need a win. They have to win at least one of those three games that are remaining. But it's just, as you said, England went into the tournament as one of the favourites, and we've seen two major slip-ups, really. You know, one is forgivable against Pakistan early on. Yeah. We all know how unpredictable Pakistan can be. But yeah, that result yesterday against Sri Lanka, as Michael Vaughan says, has put the cat among the pigeons.
And England played some poor cricket yesterday. Ben Stokes was at the crease. He was looking imperious. And they basically ran out of partners. Moeen Ali played a really poor shot. Joffre Archer, who can bat, played a poor shot. All you've got to do is rotate the strike, and Ben Stokes would have won the game for England yesterday. I have no doubt about that if they had just stayed with them. But they wanted to play too many hero shots. They didn't play the moment. They tried to win the game by themselves, and it wasn't, the situation didn't require that. Couple that with what New Zealand and Kane Williamson did a couple of days ago on a difficult wicket, when he kept his head when all around him was panicking, and found some partnerships and got New Zealand through to the last over, and then hit a six and a four to win the match. And just by calm, controlled, sort of systematic way of playing the moment. The big thing I said about England going to this is they will beat themselves.
Yeah.
They haven't been in a situation where they're massive favourites in a World Cup at home. Can they deal with the pressure? Yesterday they didn't deal with the pressure of the situation.
Yeah.
Well, let us know your thoughts on this on 4001. You've said, Arch, and I want to hear those disagreements. I want to get this out in the open and 4001 on this, because a lot of people had a view on this. The current setup of the World Cup, for those perhaps that don't follow cricket, first time that we've seen a 10-nation World Cup.
They've not went, the first time.
Well, since the change.
92.
Since 92. So it's the first time they've went back since 1992. It's a 10-nation World Cup. It's one pool. It's nine matches that each of these teams are playing. Robbie was making the point that lack of jeopardy here, that you're allowed a couple of losses. In World Cups, when we talk about World Cups, you're allowed one loss. After that, you're out. You're not getting to the pinnacle of your chosen sport by losing two matches. Is the current setup with this one group of 10, is it the right way?
let me preface what I'm going to say by I think 10 teams are wrong for the World Cup. I'd like to see 12 teams.
Right.
So let me just put that out there for a start. I think the likes of Ireland have earned their right to dine at the World Cup table with another team, the best of the rest. That being said, Ireland had a chance to qualify for the tournament. The West Indies and Afghanistan had to qualify for the tournament. So they went through qualifying rounds. So
they earned their place, yeah.
Ireland had the chance and they didn't make it. But I would like to see 12 teams at the World Cup. I'll say that. With a 10-team World Cup, this is the only format that works. 10 teams round robin. You can't split them into two pools of five. It doesn't work.
Why?
Because you talk about jeopardy. In two pools of five, you play four matches. Then you have what's called the Super Sixes situation. So you end up playing two round robins. You can still lose two matches and go through. I think that you talk about no jeopardy in the tournament now. South Africa have to win every match to qualify. West Indies now have to win every match to qualify. Sri Lanka have to win every match to qualify. England can't afford to lose another match. They're in problem. So there is jeopardy now. And it's just the way.
It's taken us 3 weeks to get there.
Yeah.
It's just taken us 3 weeks. Well, it's 45 matches. And it's a 48 match event with two semi-finals and a final. It's 45 matches. The broadcasters, to fund the development of world cricket, which the majority comes from the World Cup, need at least 45 to 50 matches. This is the format that delivers that. With splitting it into two pools of five, you can't deliver enough matches under that format.
If you play twice.
You're still going to lose twice. I think that's boring. Playing two matches. Unless it's India, Pakistan, which you know we all want to see more of that. I just think with a 10-team World Cup, this is the format that has to work. Look, the rain's a shame, but it does rain in the UK. It does rain in cricket. And some of those matches that have been rained off, that does affect the tournament. For say New Zealand India was rained off, both teams would probably take the point. That point is probably the difference between qualifying or not qualifying. It's like the tiebreaker. But when say you're playing a strong team is playing one of the so-called weaker teams, and that match is rained off, that then can play havoc. And I think South Africa suffered a couple of rained out matches which really couldn't give them any momentum, albeit they played pretty poorly as well and not played up to expectations. So for me, there is jeopardy now in the back end of the tournament. You know, we can argue the pros and cons, but due to broadcasters wanting 45 matches plus the two semi-finals and the final, this format's fine for me. 92 was a great World Cup, and this was the same format in Australia and New Zealand. And I for me, given it's 10-team World Cup, which I'm not a fan of, it's the best format to take it forward.
I certainly agree with you, Arch. I would prefer it to be a 12-team World Cup. I think, you know, you have to give the opportunity for some of the smaller cricket nations to develop themselves. You know, the UAE have been there. They've played at the Cricket World Cup. Ireland have played. Scotland have played. Netherlands have played. You know, it's a great platform, even if you're losing matches on that big stage. I've always been a believer in this, whether it's a slightly expanded European Championships, a slightly expanded African Nations Cup. If those smaller teams get the opportunity to play on the biggest stage of them all, it is only going to be a good experience for those players, and it's going to only help cricket develop. Yes, they may get a few hammerings, but it's still an experience of playing at the World Cup.
Yeah,
what I'm interested in, Arch, is if it was 12 back to 12 teams, what would be your preferred format?
I think the only format then is you've got to go two pools of six and play the five matches and then have elongated playoff elimination. So I would then say three teams of the six will go through plus the two best winners and play like a quarterfinal round, a semi-final round, and a final round to get the number of matches in. So you can
rather than the second round, the Super Sixes.
The Super Sixes was always a really interesting format because the Super Sixes, you played the teams in the other pool that you hadn't played, and you carried your points forward against the teams that you did play. It's always a bit confusing to work out what was going on. But I think if it's a 12-team format, and I don't know all the numbers in terms of how many matches will end up being played, but two groups of six. Three teams each qualify, so six teams go through, and then maybe the two best finishers go through, and then you have a quarterfinal knockout, semi-final knockout, and a final knockout. I think that's the only way it could work, but I haven't done the maths. That's just me just making it up in my head.
I think
it's difficult either way. I think you can argue either way, but you've got to remember, the Cricket World Cup is the primary event that funds the development of world cricket. What the ICC have decided is the T20 World Cup, which is held every 2 years, is I think it's 16 or 18 teams now. So that's the way to grow the game globally. It's the way that the likes of the smaller associate members and affiliate members do get a chance to qualify, whether it be Scotland or the Netherlands or the USA or, you know, Ireland, for example. They play in that event. That's the one that gives them exposure. That's the matches where they should be closer due to the nation of a 20-over match. I don't like seeing massive one-sided 50-over matches. They're really boring. They're really boring when it's massively one-sided. T20 format eliminates the big one-sidedness of those matches. For me, I still quite like the 50-over format. I think a good game of 50-over cricket still beats a good game of T20 cricket.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
I think this format, what we're talking about with six teams in each group, we had this in the 1999 World Cup where you had the top three teams from one group and the top three teams from Group B then went into the Super Six with points carried forward. And then the team that was number three, they had to fight their way back. Or like I remember India was in a position where they had to win, almost all their Super Six matches. And Australia topped the group. They had the luxury of the points. But if this kind of system is followed, I totally agree, we would have more exciting World Cup. And we would have two other nations, such as maybe Scotland, Zimbabwe, in there as well.
Well, we've got Cassim Ali, Head of Cricket Development at the ICC Academy right here in Dubai. He's going to be joining us next to lend us his thoughts on this. Very interested to get the thoughts of a man who is part of the ICC structure as well. If you've got a thought, get it in 4001. Let us know, are you happy or are you not happy with the current structure? I was going to say Robbie Greenfield, it's Mark Archer who's standing down. Me at the moment. He has made some very good points indeed. Keep your thoughts coming in on 4001. Stay tuned.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. A lot of you getting in touch. We'll get to your texts in just a moment. Before we welcome in Cass into the conversation, Head of Development here at the ICC Academy. We are coming to you live from Kickers, incidentally. It is myself, Chris McCarty, Mark Lomas. We're joined by Monty, our armchair fan as well, and Mark Archer. We are with you all the way through until 6 o'clock. Let's get a quick update. It is, what is it, day 24, match 28 of this 2019 ICC Cricket World Cup. It is India against Afghanistan, and Mark Archer's across it.
Yes, we're down in Southampton for the first of two matches today in this doubleheader day. Afghanistan taking on undefeated India. India can jump to second in the table, and that's before New Zealand take on the West Indies at Old Trafford starting in about an hour's time. There's just been a wicket though. Vijay Shankar has been LBW Rumit Shah for 29, which means India 128 for 3 after 29 overs. So you can say the game's in the balance, but two of the big boys, the Indian big boys, are at the crease. Virat Kohli, the captain, 62 not out off only 57 deliveries. He's been accumulating runs, 5 fours in that innings, but he's been knocking it around. And who's joined him at the crease? Of course, it's MS Dhoni, batting number 5. He's only faced a couple of balls. He's 2 not out. So India trying to set themselves up for a big charge in the last 10, 15 overs. 128 for 3 after 29 of their 50 overs.
Plenty of tennis around the world to keep up to date with as well. Of course, Wimbledon comes into view a week on Monday. SW19 will be opening its gates to the third major of the year. Mark Lomas is keeping an eye on both Queens over in London, and there's Halle over in Germany as well.
Yeah, so Halle in Germany, we've got the first of the two semi-finals today, Matteo Berrettini versus David Goffin. It's 3-2 at the moment in the first set to Matteo Berrettini, all going on serve so far. Winner of that match likely to be playing against Roger Federer, probably in the final, going for his 10th title. Halle really is the Roger Federer Open. He plays against Pierre-Hugues Helbert, who is going to be Andy Murray's doubles partner at Wimbledon. I believe so, yeah. So that's going to be the second semi-final later on. Queens yet to start in the single semi-finals. We've got Dmitry Medvedev versus Gilles Simon and Hugues Alia-Lassime.
Yeah, Canadian.
Good effort. The teenage Canadian. He's had an absolutely remarkable tournament so far at Queens. He's against Feliciano Lopez, who's Andy Murray's doubles partner for Queens. So he may have to play three matches in a row, Lopez, there, because they have to finish off their doubles quarterfinal and then the doubles semi-final potentially afterwards as well.
Wow, we'll keep an eye on all of that. And Mark's absolutely right, Roger Federer, quite remarkable, going for a 10th title over in Halle. Of course, Andy Murray making his return, albeit in the doubles, after hip surgery. Of course, we were very quick to usher Andy Murray into retirement back in January. He's having none of it. This is the start of what he will hope will be a successful return to top-level tennis. I want to get back to the cricket chat. I want to welcome, in actual fact, our next guest into the conversation, because delighted to be joined by a good friend of ours on the grill. It is Cassim Ali, Head of Cricket Development down here at the ICC Academy. Very good afternoon to you, Cass.
Welcome, chaps. Yeah, thank you very much.
Are you enjoying this World Cup? I know there's been a lot of weather issues, but putting the weather to one side and all the rain over in the UK, have you enjoyed it, honestly?
Honestly, mixed emotions, to be fair. There's been a lot of ups and downs in terms of the results. Obviously, weather's not helped the situation. I'm not enjoying the format, if I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be really honest there. I'm not enjoying the format, but that's something that the ICC have made a decision on, and I would have personally have liked to see some Associate Nation teams coming in, some teams that have actually earned from the associate sort of pool to come in there and cause a massive upset to some of the big boys. So that, for me, is what the World Cup is all really about.
Yeah, it's been missing that. Other than Sri Lanka's win yesterday, and I know Mark Archer's thinking intently here, there's not really been another shock in this. I mean, Pakistan on their day can beat anyone, so I'm not chalking that down as a shock, them beating England. Sri Lanka winning yesterday has been the biggest shock of the tournament.
Yeah, big shock, again, as we said at the top of the show. England, big favourites at home, the hosts, the crowds are generally behind them. There's a bit of momentum there, but are they starting to feel a bit of mental pressure? Yesterday they played some really poor cricket, particularly during a chasing a relatively gettable total. Ben Stokes left stranded on 85, wonderful innings. He would have won the game for England if someone had stuck with him. Moeen Ali got to point the finger at him. Jofra Archer got to point the finger at him. But playing really bad shots with a couple of overs to play. Again, the example is look at Kane Williamson a couple of days before, kept a level head, took it to the final over and did what he had to do. And that's what England have to do, take it to the final over. They would have got a win yesterday. But are they dealing with the mental sort of skeletons in the closet there? But as I said, the event needs some upsets and needs some drama, needs some twists and turns. It's a long event. Today's game's 28. We've got to get to games 45 before we get to semi-final. So, for me, good thing for the tournament. But England, they'll be starting to worry a little bit about that, a little bit of inconsistency, which we thought going into the event, so consistent, so good under pressure. Are they getting thrown a few curveballs now? But, good for the event. But we'd like to see some more drama now in the next couple of weeks.
Who's impressed you? Sorry, Mark. I was just going to say, who's impressed you, but go on, Mark.
I was just going to say, I was reading today that actually it might be beneficial for England to finish fourth anyway rather than in the top... in the second or third, because they will play the semi-final at Old Trafford, and they showed against Afghanistan the other day that it's a bit of a better surface for them. They could smash it around there. Otherwise, they'd be playing at Edgbaston, which arguably not quite as good a surface for them. So
Interesting. Maybe
they'll be chasing the fourth place.
Being a Lancastrian, that's music to my ears to know that, you know, Old Trafford is a lot better than Edgbaston in terms of the wickets. And I'm sure people of the north would definitely agree with you there.
Are you worried at all, Cass, from what you've seen? I mean, speaking as a proud Englishman that you are, have you been worried for what you've seen from England? Do you still think they will be there or thereabouts come the end?
Personally, I've had them down as favourites. I mean, them and obviously India for me, Australia being, you know, there or thereabouts as well. But for me, that's another chase that they've actually not done really well with. Obviously, we spoke about the inexperience of Archer there and obviously Moeen Ali, who've both had IPL experience. So to have that experience and still not execute under pressure is a bit worrying. I thought Ben Stokes for a second there had it. I thought, and to be fair to Mark Wood, he's not a batter, but I mean, he tried to do a job, but you know, what's gone before him should have been made to help accountable there. I think we've just lost another wicket there.
We certainly have. Let's break away to talk all things India-Afghanistan match ongoing, and it's the big one gone.
Oh, it's the big fish has gone himself, Virat Kohli. It's a short ball from the spinner. He's led back to try and cut it, and all he's done is hit it to the man just behind point. It's a pretty easy catch in the end, and that's a massive wicket for Afghanistan, and that will shift the momentum now. So India, 135 for four after 30 of their 50 overs. Could we see another upset? Imagine Afghanistan beating India. What a result that would be for world cricket. But there is plenty of depth in the Indian batting order. There's 20 overs to go. I still expect to score up around 300 here. But it has been a dry wicket in Southampton. They opened with a spin bowler who picked up Rohit Sharma really early in this inning. So the wicket is not the best for batting. It's not a bad bowling wicket, and the Indian team's also packed with spin bowlers. So India now, 135 for four after 30.3 of their 50 overs. Virat Kohli dismissed for 67.
What a story it would be if Afghanistan can claim the scalp of India. In terms of, let's not all be doom and gloom about this World Cup, because there are some fantastic performances. We've seen that. David Warner, Kane Williamson the other day as well, Malinga rolling back the years yesterday as well. What have you enjoyed most, Cass? Who stood out for you? Which team, which players?
To be fair, I've been quite impressed with how Warner handles himself. Yeah. Obviously, he's been talked about over the last sort of 12 to 18 months in terms of his performances off the pitch. But he's come back with immense, you know, responsibility. He's actually led Australia's batting firepower at the top. Him and Finch look formidable up top. I've been impressed with, obviously, Australia, the way they've handled themselves. Quietly, the New Zealand boys have just gone away, chipping away at the structure. And for me, I've been really impressed with Shakib. Shakib Al-Hasan from, obviously, Bangladesh. Got a lot of responsibility on his head. Is a wily character, but has performed under pressure. And again, under pressure is what it comes down to. And I've been impressed with these guys. From a bowling point of view, impressed with Archer with his pace. But Mitchell Stark for me is, has always been one that I've always admired, and he's showing up trumps, you know, in this
absolutely
tournament.
Australia, it's a fair point there as well. The Ashes, lest we forget there is an Ashes to come after this ICC World Cup. The fact that these Aussie boys are over, getting used to these English conditions, means that, you know, looking ahead, past beyond this ICC World Cup, that Ashes series is going to be something special.
Oh, it's going to be huge, and not just for the cricket in England, it's going to be massive for spectators around the world as well. So for me, yes, they're getting early indications into how the pitchers might behave. Obviously, the red ball will move a lot more than the white ball, so the skill of Jimmy Anderson and Broad coming into there. And obviously, England, for me, are very much tip favourites for me, because I think they've got every dynamic covered, and the boys are playing really well in county cricket at the moment. I've just seen Jimmy take a lot of wickets for Lancs as well, so that's great news for us guys.
And I think Jofra Archer is showing that he could be a third fast bowler in that option with Broad and Anderson, because he does look a real talent. He's a proper player.
And he's quick as well. So, I mean, and that's one thing I think England have been missing over the years, is to have some raw express pace. And I think that's been missing over the years. So that could be the wow factor. That could be the point of difference that has something on edge for the Ashes series. So I would love to see him open the bowling with Jimmy.
Who did we all say before the tournament? You were very much in the West Indies camp, Arch.
I went the West Indies, so I didn't name any of the big guns. I didn't want to name India or England or Australia. So my team that I thought could surprise would have been the West Indies. And they've shown the glimpses. They should have beaten Australia. They had Australia 50 for 5, and they let them off the hook. And they're disappointed now. They're just, the inconsistency we associate with the guys, the boys from the Caribbean, has been there to highlight it. A bit like Pakistan.
Yeah.
On their day, they're a match for anyone. But Pakistan and West Indies just can't find consistency. The players can't just seem to rise to a consistent level. It's not good enough doing it match by match. You need to get it across a string of performances. And for me, that's the big disappointment with the West Indies, also with Pakistan.
Who did you go with, Lomas, before a ball was...
I was saying England, and I think 2 weeks ago on the show here, I said England again. But yeah, I still think they'll be in there, and I still think they'll get one of those final results against Australia, New Zealand or India that will make sure they get into the semi-finals. I have to say I'm now erring a little bit more towards India. Although, yeah, maybe I'll give them the kiss of death now and they'll lose to Afghanistan. Yeah, so yeah, let's go with India.
Let's watch this. We'll keep an eye on that match. For you, Cass, before a ball was thrown down, it was very much England for you?
It was very much, but obviously with the three fixtures that they've got coming up are very, very hard fixtures, and any one of them defeats, makes it very difficult for England. It pains me to say India, but they look formidable. They absolutely look fantastic. They've got every dynamic covered, every player is in form, and their second string side could actually take on any one of the teams in the World Cup. So, it's hard to move away from India.
You are, of course, the head of cricket development here in Dubai for the ICC Academy. Be honest with me, Cass, a lot of the kids that you are kind of coaching and teaching, was there a buzz, was there a spring in their step ahead of this World Cup? Were they excited to watch their heroes?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot, obviously, with any Indian kids. I mean, we've got a lot of South Asian kids that come to the academy, and there's a lot of idols, cricket idols that they look up to, whether that it's World Cup or IPL or anything like that. We obviously had the IPL period that was coming onto the back of our coaching program, yeah. So they weren't looking too far ahead to the World Cup. But for me, any role model on the pitch is a great role model for the kids off the pitch. So we need to inspire them to work towards. I mean, you've got to just look at Kohli and some of the things that he says and does off the pitch, let alone his batting. Take that away for 1 second. Everything that he does, and he leads himself well off the pitch. He's great in the gym. He inspires himself to go and work hard and get that extra sort of motivation wherever he is. That is great attributes and behaviours for me in terms of young kids coming through. So for me, at the end of the day, as much as possible, I would love to see one of the kids from UAE go on and represent India, UAE, or even be in the IPL, because that would do wonders for this place.
Just kind of following up on what Chris says, though, I mean, is there an interest still from kids in the 50-over game, in the one day? You said they're excited to see the IPL. It's a very entertaining spectacle. But when we come, do kids sit down and watch a 50-over ODI?
I think they do. I think obviously with the World Cup going on at the moment, I think they do. IPL takes precedence, 20 overs, shorter format. There's a lot of short format going on in recreational cricket here, which obviously kids can inspire to and connect to. For me personally, I think there needs to be 50 over competitions, both locally and for regionally and nationally, played at a junior level, so that our structure needs to change towards 50 overs. I think along with 20 overs is great, but for me, the longer format almost highlights the disciplines of a young cricketer coming through, whether you're a batter, bowler, fielder. The longer you're playing in the game, the more you're learning about yourself and the opposition, and the more you're developing your skills and also identifying areas that you can improve on. 20 overs for me, even 10 overs, is crash bang wallop at the moment, and that for me doesn't tell me how good a player is in a long format.
Cass, I want to ask you about sort of development strategy and coaching strategy. When I grew up, it was all very MCC sort of coaching manual stuff, you know, front foot, front elbow high, play in the V. But we see so much T20 cricket now with all the innovative shots, all the different variations of bowling. Do kids come into the academy and want to sort of start running before they can walk? Is it all about sort of wanting to play all the trick shots and the ramps and the reverse sweeps before they can play a good off drive and on drive and get their forward defense? How do you guys go about sort of keeping them interested but also going back to basics and really harboring on about what's the fundamental essentials of good cricket?
Yeah, absolutely, and you've nailed it on the head there. Kids see everything on TV nowadays, and they want to play all the shots, you know, a Butler shot or a Dhoni shot or whatever it is they want to go and aspire to and play that in the nets. It does get a little bit difficult if a coach cannot handle that child in terms of wanting to get the basics instilled. I think basics are massively important even throughout any format, whether it's short or long format. I think from coaching perspective, I would encourage all coaches to encourage individuality from a child, but instill the fundamentals in terms of transfer of balance, in terms of back foot contact when you're bowling. The skill and the repertoire will come a little bit later, as long as you can get the foundation. It's like building a house. If you can get the foundation right, you can put as many stories as you want. That's the skill element of it. But if you can't get the foundation right, that house is going to fall down very, very quickly. You might have skill for 1 year, 2 years before you get taken out of the game. So for me as a coach, I would encourage anybody to encourage individuality more than anything else, but instill foundation from a young age. We know from 13 onwards, they look to start to specialise, but they're not specialists. So anything before that, I would encourage coaches and parents to let them play as many different sports as possible to get the foundation of motor skill learning or cognitive learning and be sociable to other people as well, because they're huge aspects in actually developing good athletes.
I guess one of the important things is when you look at cricketers that I'd say the top four batsmen in the world that we can, you know, Virat Kohli, Joe Root, Steve Smith, Kane Williamson, they all play all three formats.
They're all in my top 11, by the way.
So you can say that they are fine T20 players. They all play in the IPL, or they all play T20 cricket, but they're also leading run scorers at the 50 over of cricket, but they've all got fine test records where they're probably all average over 50 in test cricket. So you basically go back, if your fundamentals aren't right, you're not going to fail in all three formats. And there's four good examples of the top batsmen can change the way they play, change their style, but not necessarily change the fundamentals behind the cricket.
Excellent point. And kids have got to be adaptable to understand that. And players are starting to adapt that. You look at the best players in the world, can actually go across all three formats. And for a team and a selector and a head coach's point of view, I know I've got two or three people who I'm going to take right across the board. You look at the England side at the moment, majority of them will not change for the test match. Bar one or two players might come in, and I think that's the beauty of England at the moment, is they've stuck with 4 years ago, they've stuck with a crop of 15 players, 16 players, 20 probably in that pack, to say you guys are going to win us all three formats, whether it's T20, test match or 50 over one day cricket, you're going to win us that format. And you know, credit to them, they've identified it early, they've stuck with it regardless of the criticism, and they've actually produced on the pitch, albeit yesterday's dilemma. But we go back to, sorry, just to mention the we spoke about, you know, the individuality of young players. You only have to look at Malinga yesterday. Yeah. He's not a textbook cricketer. He's not a textbook bowler, but he delivers on demand. He's slightly overweight as well, but he delivers on demand. And that, for me, the delivery that he bowled in the IPL final, that one split moment, you know, to execute that skill under pressure with millions, probably billions of people watching around the world, and to deliver that with precision and accuracy, what a great player.
Give us a bit of an insight if you can as well, Cass, to the talent pool here. Is it here? And I appreciate, and I want to be respectful, and there'll be parents listening, and I'm sure they've got maybe small children, boys and girls, playing the game of cricket. What I mean by the talent is the talent pool here to go on and make it as first class cricketers.
I think there is. I think there's definitely a talent of, you know, raw cricketers, exceptionally good cricketers who are playing in different academies. I think there is. You know, our UA under-90s have just qualified for the World Cup in January. They've got an Asia Cup tournament coming in October, sort of August time, sorry. I've just seen our under-16s, UAE under-16s, do their first fitness testing. And can I just shout out one lad, Amir Badami, who's actually got 19.4 from my academy, of course. Got top score. So for me, there is a talent pool there. Definitely, he'll enjoy that for me. There is a talent pool definitely that's out there. I think for me, there is not a structure here that actually accelerates that. There's got to be a first-class structure here in Dubai. However that looks, how quickly that is.
So a conversation's been had, Kaz. I don't want to put you on the spot, but because I've spoken to you numerous times, if you're telling me that the talent pool is there and it's a structural thing, and I appreciate Rome wasn't built in a day, these things take time, but we have had conversations. I've now been here almost a decade. Cricket has moved on exponentially from when I first arrived here. The growth, and that's testament to the likes of yourselves, to Sam Charnley as well, there's Dougie Brown, there's so many people to name, David East as well, the former ECB chairman, so many people who have done their bit. The structure, are conversations being had to get the structure in place to allow these children the best possible chance to go and make it as a first class cricketer?
Yeah, absolutely, and you only have to look from the top end. They want to become test nation, they want to get a test nation, they want to be playing the longer format of cricket, and in order to do that they've got to be producing cricketers at first class level, which we haven't got at the moment. There is a big divide between the cricketers coming in who are playing recreational cricket to step up to UAE cricket, whether that's the short format, the white ball cricket or red ball cricket. We haven't got that structure in place, and there are definitely conversations I know of that have been had in place to re-change the structure, and I believe it's around the corner. So, you know, watch out for this space. There's talks of a cricket academy coming on board in terms of a national academy. So there's lots of things that have been talked about to try and get our young cricketers actually moving forward. It's soon going to be the day when we actually have some IPL cricketers within local cricket coming from here. And it will soon be the day, because I think there's so much talent in India, but there's so much talent around the world. Yeah. You know, and it only needs one scout to come across here, pick a lad up from not the national team. I'm talking about recreational cricketers who are actually playing on the street that could make a difference for that one ball, one over. You know, it could be a Malinga ball. You don't know that, do you? And I think that's where cricket's headed.
It's quite exciting. It really is. That is the voice of Kasim Ali. He is with us for the next... Well, he's going to be with us for the next while, is what he is. He is head of cricket development, ICC Academy, right here in Dubai. We're coming to you live from Kickers. Great atmosphere down here. You can probably hear the hustle and bustle behind us. It is a Saturday afternoon, of course. All your sporting needs covered down here at Kickers Sports Bar. Happy hour from 3 until 7. Drinks for as little as 19 dirhams. And as a proud Scot... You've had me sold right there. Stay tuned. Much more chat on all things sport to come between now and 6.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Yeah, the game is always on. Welcome back to the show. Myself, Chris McCarty, filling in for Mr. Uckert today. Tom is over in the UK at Royal Ascot. That's where he is.
Of course he is.
We'll maybe catch up with Tom between now and 6 o'clock. He is having a right old jolly over there. Of course, it's been a good week for Godolphin a little earlier this week. We'll touch on that a little later on as well, talking all things cricket for the majority of this hour. Let's give you a quick update, if we can, in this match 28. It is day 24. Don't know why the days are important, but I'm sticking with it anyway. Mark Archer's keeping an eye on it for us.
Yeah, two matches today in the ICC Cricket World Cup. The match starting in about half an hour is at Old Trafford, Manchester, where New Zealand will take on the West Indies. West Indies only 3 points from 5 matches. A must-win game for the men from the Caribbean. Of course, New Zealand second on the table. If they win against the West Indies today, they'll go top of the table and pretty much guarantee a semi-final spot. The match underway early is in Southampton, and I can report that it is sunny skies down there in the south coast of England. Afghanistan are taking on India, and are making a pretty good fist of this match so far. India won the toss and elected to bat first, and 151 for 4 after 35 of their 50 overs. So 15 overs remaining. And the big wicket recently was Virat Kohli, the captain, caught Ramit Shah in the backward point, bowled by Mohammad Nabi for 67. At the crease, MS Dhoni is not out on 8, and Yadav has joined him, not out on 11. So India, 151 for 4 with 15 overs remaining. They're going to want to try and push it up between 280 to 300 to be competitive. But Afghanistan have really given a good account of themselves in the field and with their bowling, and restricted India so far. 151 for 4, 15 overs remaining.
That's the cricket. Keeping an eye on the tennis for you guys as well. Over in Halle, Germany, over in Queens in London as well. There's just tennis galore.
There is, yeah. The first semi-final at Halle is Matteo Berrettini versus Davy Goffin. It's still all on serve, 5-5 in the first set there. Just over to Birmingham as well, in the women's tennis, there's another semi-final there. Barbara Strakova is a set down against French Open champion Ash Barty, who won that 6-4, 3-3 in the second set there. And Queens is kicking off very soon, in like 10 minutes' time. Dmitry Medvedev against Gilles Simon is the first semi-final at Queens.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one as well. There is a small matter of some European tour action in the world of golf. It's over in Munich this weekend, the BMW International Open. I can tell you that it's the Englishman Jordan Smith who leads the way, a man who we had in our studios maybe about 18 months or so ago. Jordan Smith doing very well. He shot a 70 round one, a 67 yesterday. He is 6 under par for his round today through 17, so he holds a one-shot lead over Matthias Schwab and Matthew Fitzpatrick, another winner, a former winner of the DP World Tour Championship. Matt Wallace, who's in sensational form, a young man with a huge future in the world of golf, he's also there or thereabouts at 11 under par. The old timer Lee Westwood, he's on 10 under par, he's 3 under for his round today. Martin Keimer as well, who's gone in reverse, 2 over through 16 for the home favourite. He is now at 9 under par. So it is an Englishman who leads the way. It is Jordan Smith. We'll keep you bang up to date with the BMW International Open. Now then, I want to get the boys' thoughts and I want to widen this conversation out, and I'd love to hear from you guys out there on 4001 on this as well. And it pertains to your responsibility on social media. A story this past week, Manchester United's Jesse Lingard, on his social media, on Snapchat, on his holidays, enjoying his holidays with his teammate Marcus Rashford and another couple of friends. He posted on Snapchat, in which he's entitled to do, it's his life, some industrial language, to say the least, some unedifying things on there. It sparked a backlash, and I want to get the boys' thoughts here, on the responsibility of an athlete to use social media correctly. When I say correctly, there will be those out there that say it's each to their own, he can do what he wants. I'll start with you, Mark Lomas. Jesse Lingard, yay or nay?
Nay, a big nay. For me, it's an absolute disgrace, I think, when you have so many children who are fans and using social media and following particular sports stars. I think if you want to use that kind of language, I think you need to have separate accounts. You have an account that you maybe use just among friends. You can have a private Instagram account. You don't have to share yourself on Snapchat. You know, you can just have that kind of tighter knit group of people who perhaps you share your most personal things with, like that. But you have to think about, exactly as you said, it's about responsibility. And he's got thousands, millions of young Manchester United fans following him around the world. And the language is disgusting. Like, it's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, some of the stuff that he's alluding to there as well. I don't know. For me, you have to think about it. And these guys, these players, you know, Jesse Lingard isn't a teenager. He's in his mid-20s. Yeah. You know, I don't think you can, maybe if you're 16, 17 years old breaking into the first team, you can forgive mistakes like that. And, you know, there have been lots of mistakes from lots of people on social media. But when you're in your mid-20s, he's been in the game long enough. You know, he understands how social media works. It was just a stupid, stupid thing to do. And, I think he should be advised better, but he should know himself as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That would be my point to all of this. Mark Archer, you're a man who has represented athletes, Alan Donald being one of them. You were his agent for a spell. I mean, what would the advice, what would you be saying? I appreciate that all those years back when you had some hair, that there wasn't social media kicking around then, Archie. But now, what would you be saying if you were representing an athlete or athletes when it comes to social media?
I can't imagine Alan Donald being on the rampage in Florida in that style.
No, when I had Alan Donald, and this was going back 20 years, I was worried about what happened to Edgbaston when I was there, and himself and Lance Klusener managed to lose a World Cup semi-final. That was the sort of issue I had to deal with. But no, look, I was lucky enough and fortunate to manage a lot of young athletes in a variety of different sports. And you want them to have a voice, you want them to have an opinion, you want them to tell a story and engage, but there is a line. You have a responsibility to yourself, to your family, to your club, not put out information or things that will bring all those factors, all those stakeholders into disrepute. And, you know, we can talk. I haven't seen the Lingard piece, but I can, by looking at you guys shaking your head, it wasn't good.
No.
I'm a Manchester United fan, so I anyone that represents the club should be held to high standards. And I don't care whether it's a personal account or an account where you promote products and goods, you have a responsibility as a role model for so many kids. Well, we've had the debate on the radio about language and footballers' behaviour in general, which I have an issue with. But, you know, we look at what's happened with Israel Folau in recent weeks. I had a shred of sorrow for the initial incident that happened, and I gave him the benefit of the doubt. But any benefit of the doubt that I've given him now has been totally misplaced, and I have a massive resentment about players using social media to promote highly controversial subjects. And it's just, there's no good going to come of it for anyone. And I understand that players want to have a voice and use it, but they've got to accept the consequences. So if a player, and you're contracted to a club, you have obligations to that club, you have obligations to your country if you're an international player, and you think that you have a respect for fans, respect for your family, if you're going to step over the line, then they should be penalised in some shape or form, whether it be financial, whether it be reprimanded, hold to higher standards. Because they can say, well, we're normal people, we're on holiday, but you have a responsibility, and that for me is not good enough. So I hope something comes of it, and there is a strong warning, or the club makes an issue of it, because it's the only way that, you know, these guys have so many millions of followers. For me, it's just not good enough.
I think if you're in a normal working environment, you have a social media account, and you put out something like that in which you're effing and blinded, I think you've got to expect that it's going to come back to you in some way if your employer saw that. So I totally agree with you, Arch. I think Manchester United need to fine Jesse Lingard at least a couple of weeks' wages.
It's not the club. He also has sponsors, and he also has a fan base. And so you represent a lot of people when you're a professional athlete, and you've got to be held to that responsibility. It's one thing for them to earn a lot of money, and the footballers in particular earn a lot of money. Then they should be held to that. They should be held accountable for their actions.
I tell you what, if Sir Alex Ferguson was still in charge,
is that the problem?
That language definitely would not be used.
Is that the problem, Cass?
I think he'd be out the door this summer. I personally think that, because at the end of the day, you look at through Man United's era when Fergie was in charge. Apart from Beckham, who was up there? How many people actually stepped over the line?
Yeah, Roy
Keane. Yeah. But he actually performed on the pitch as well, and I'm not sure Jesse Lingard is performing on the pitch.
Is that the problem? Is the greater issue here? And I'd love to hear from you guys out there on this particular subject. I'm going to play devil's advocate in just a second. Before I do that, though, is the larger issue here not that there's a real vacuum, the power base of higher up in that football club, whether it stems from the manager, whether it stems from the CEO, the owners, that there is a vacuum there? There is no one who is actually guiding these. Yeah. These players are running wild,
Chris, there's one player that comes in mind, Roy Keane. Everyone says that Roy Keane is arrogant, he's rude, but this man has a point. And if Jesse Lingard was listening to what Roy Keane said 4 weeks ago, he said that Jesse Lingard gets paid $120,000 to be an Instagrammer rather than a footballer. If he was paying attention to Roy Keane, he wouldn't have done this. But I guess kids these days are so spoiled with all the money that they get, and this is what ruins them. They're more after the money, after the lifestyle in Miami, partying, but it's not the football. And that is what Manchester United is lacking at the moment. Players who play for the club with their heart. Paul Scholes, Roy Keane, Ryan Giggs. Look at them. Put them as an example and play for your club. If they did that, it wouldn't happen.
It was interesting. There was a tweet that went out and someone said, he's acting as if he's won the lottery. And it was the response to that that someone said, well, he has. He's earning $6 million a year. He's signed a 4-year deal. Do the maths on that. That's £24 million.
He's the biggest thing to come out of my hometown of Warrington, Christian's Kerry Katona.
He is a Warrington boy as well, of course, over in the UK. But Cass, it's probably a lesson here. In terms of what you do with kids, is social media and teaching kids a responsible way to use social media, is that part of your kind of remit?
I think every coach, every administrator, every manager has got a responsibility to make sure that their players are acting responsibly on social media. The language that they use, the way they portray themselves, even the words that they use are not portrayed as negative or incitative towards anybody else. I think Jesse, from any professional, I mean, you've just got to take Virat Kohli, for example. He goes to social media to promote wellness, goodness, positivity, anything that he does to inspire other people. You look at Ronaldo.
Some products as well.
Some products as well, of course. But you look at Ronaldo. Ronaldo does the same. There's a lot of images of him about his family now. So he's changed from that, you know, pin-up boy to being actually a family member with his young kids, but still performing on the pitch. I think social media is dangerous. I personally believe that. I think we're in the world where social media dictates and controls people's contracts and people's livelihoods. Unfortunately, that's, for me, is a massive distraction on the pitch.
I
just think big sports stars now have to not only manage managers and their clubs, but also manage their Twitter handlers.
That's really interesting to me that you think it's the responsibility of the actual coach rather than, for example, a communications or a media officer, a press officer at the club. Who does it ultimately lie with the responsibility?
I feel sorry for the media manager at United because he's got a lot to deal with Pogba there as well.
I'll speak very honestly. I have seen, and I'll name no names, I have seen instances where the media managers are spoken to as if they are a nobody. It's disgusting. That's what we're talking about when you give youngsters, and again we're probably casting aspersions a little bit perhaps too much, we're generalising a little too much. There are numerous, countless athletes who are earning huge money who have remained, you know, the humility, who have remained humble, who have remained someone who, well, they're P's and Q's, it costs nothing. I've seen instances though where in some cases the money has gone to the head, and a media manager, a communications manager, are, who are you to tell me what to do? So from that perspective, it does come from the manager. It's got to come from the manager. You've got to say, hey, listen, if you don't act a certain way, then you're not playing for me. But of course, the problem in today's world, more than ever, player power now, managers are losing jobs over player power.
Yeah, and I think it varies sport by sport, but ultimately the manager is important. But it's all about the culture. The culture of the organisation that you're in. And I know it's a well-worn out example. Look at the All Blacks. It's a self-governing culture amongst the team. The management don't have a say. It's what the senior members of the team, the leadership, decide. And they all buy into the rules and the regulations of being an All Black and your responsibilities. And there's a, I'll think of the right word here, there's a no policy. There's a policy, whereas if you don't want to adhere to the culture, then you might as well go and move to the UK and play your club rugby over there. And that no one's bigger than the shirt, no one's bigger than the jersey, and you leave it in a better place. And the All Blacks have had some high-profile players in recent years. Dan Carter, one of the highest-profile rugby players of all time. Richie McCaw. These guys are barely... Richie McCaw's not on social media.
No.
Dan Carter has an account, but he promotes things that he's doing, and it's not the voice. So probably an example, probably too extreme one side, but it all comes back to the culture of the club, whether it be a football club, a cricket country, or a thing. That's where it gets set, within the dressing room.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.